You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Longtime listener, first-time caller.
And Erica.
First-time listener, long-time caller.
Oh.
Mm. Oh. Oh.
So how it goes? Oh. Or,
Just, Ryan, you need to pick up that line, too. She's been on hold a long time.
I have
time.
Been letting this thing ring for years. And we have a great interview for you. Daniel Gross is on the show. A longtime trailer editor for New World and beyond. But also, he edited a few films for New World. The Annihilators, Pretty Smart, and Under the Boardwalk. We're going to talk about all of them, including his history of getting into editing and how he got to New World. Because he also worked on things like Battle Beyond the Stars. He's one of the many alumni that got their start at the Lumberyard. We're going to hear some stories about that. Some stories of his time coming out of film school and working on other horror films. Daniel's a great guy, and we had an incredible time talking with him. So
let's quit pussyfooting around. Yeah, let's get to this.
Thank you. I hate it when we pussyfoot around. It's my least favorite thing that we do. So let's get to our interview with Daniel Gross.
I went to USC, and I went to the film school. I like to call it the trade school for film. And, you know, I met a lot of people there, some of them who helped me get into New World. But, I went to film school and then just got out and just started doing all kinds of stuff, set stuff.
And one of them being the Clonus Horror.
Something frightening is happening at a secret place called Clonus. Will the truth ever get out?
Yes, that was one of the first things. Okay. I did a film called Mr. Too Big or Mr. Too Little, which was a circus picture. And I was in the sound department at USC, so I knew how to run the NOG, right, check people out. And so when I got out, there was this guy, Dave Kellogg, who had a job booked to do sound or boom on that movie. So I did it. And then he said, you can do it. And I was like, oh, good. So I graduated one day, and on Monday I was working on that show with the boom.
That's great.
Yeah. So I was in the business for like $100 a week. And then the Clonus Horror must have been, a few months later. So, and I think that was 78 that I must have worked on that at some point.
Okay. And you were the boom operator on that one?
Yeah. Ken Robinson was the sound guy, and he was a teacher at USC.
Okay.
So he called me and said, you want to do this? I said, sure, I'll do it. And that was... I told my wife this story the other day because we had watched The Studio and the Apple TV show.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. And, Seth Rogen, yeah. There's so much cringy stuff going on in that, the first couple episodes. And I told her I was on the set of The Clonus Horror and I was doing boom, and Ken had to go somewhere, so I was going to do sound. So I got some grip to hold the boom, and we were doing a wide shot. And Keenan Wynn and Peter Graves and all these people were in a living room. So it was a pretty tight space. And it was the master. So, and I thought I should, get the sound with just a boom in the middle. And I was on my headphones and realizing it was terrible sound. I could barely hear anybody. So I called cuts. Which you don't do on a film set if you're a boom man / barely a sound guy. So so I got yelled at by Keenan Wynn.
Wow.
You never call cut, and everybody yelled at me. And then Bob Fiveson, who was the director, he said, don't worry about master's sound. Because we're going to get all the good sound on the close-ups. And that was the first time I'd ever heard that. And of course became a mantra the rest of your life as an editor. You don't throw that away anyway. So that was.
Why did you focus on sound when you were going to USC? What was the...
I didn't really focus. I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I could be a director. And then I realized I really didn't have that kind of talent, but I loved movies, you know.
Well,
was,
you'd mastered yelling cut, so you got
yeah,
that.
See, yeah. I thought
you were halfway there.
I was thought I was a director, and I would just say action, shut everybody up. so yeah, I ended up getting in through sound, but then I did grip work and all kinds of weird stuff. But I ended up realizing I really just wanted to be in an editing room, because you have more effect on the movie without having to, you know, sit through lunch and all these, you know, being on a film set, I decided I didn't really care for. Not a real social person, in the, especially in those days. And it was all about just sort of hanging out, you know.
Right. A lot of downtime.
A lot of downtime. And I, once I got into an editing room, and I had done some, you know, senior projects as an editor, and it was just much more fun, much more, you know, fulfilling. So,
Colonus Horror, that Merle A. Schreibman co-wrote
Merle,
it, right?
Yep.
And he,
yeah, and he was one of the producers, and he ended up going on to do, I worked on another show with him called Angel of Heat.
Right. I was wondering if that's how that connection was.
I don't
made
know
there.
Which one. That was later, though, because that came
right.
out much
that's
later.
That's years later. That's, yeah.
And Larry Bach, who cut Rock and Roll High, he cut that one with Barry Zetlin. I don't know if you've talked to Barry Zetlin.
We've not talked to Barry Zetlin. We tried to talk to Larry Bach.
Oh, that's too bad. I was good friends with him and Barry. Barry went to USC, so and he worked at New World, later New World, cutting trailers.
Yeah,
at Raleigh Studios.
Now, how do you get into, because you get into New World when it's still Roger Corman from Clonus
yes,
Horror.
Okay.
How does that happen?
There was a guy named Dwight Levers who was an electrician, and I looked him up today because I had thought of him since, you know, 50 years. And he went on to do, he was on like one of the last Star Wars movies. So he did really well moving up through working on movies. And he had called me. I was living at Echo Park, and he called me, I guess, in the summer of 79. I don't know when Battle was being shot, but he said, hey, we're all down at this place called the Lumberyard, and we got Black Beauties. Why don't you come down and you can, you know, work for like 6 days in a row for $50 a day or whatever it was. So I went down there and ended up, you know, working there for couple of weeks, and then I ended up being a carpenter there. Michelle Ferrone, who was the effects supervisor, ended up hiring me to just stay around and do carpentry work, and so I ended up just staying there for a while. I don't even know how long that was, but I ended up being on the rotoscope team,
right,
and so was Barry Zetlin was there doing, you know, and he's an editor. I was trying to be an editor. And all of a sudden we were, you know, tracing out garbage mats on, you know, rays coming out of the spaceship and stuff like that. And I, as a carpenter, I had the job of greasing the tracks of the, I think it's called the Elecon, which was their motion capture camera that, you know, went down these tracks and followed the models, you know. Stop motion,
like the ships and all that. Yeah,
and they would have to do three passes, you know, and so those tracks had to be greased every day. That was like my claim to fame. And
I mean, when you see the effects, I mean, the motion is
just pretty
seamless.
Good.
It's seamless. It is.
Yeah, they did a great job. They had a model shop around the back of the of the place. And the editing rooms were across the way in what used to be the area where they stored all the tall lumber. Because it literally had been,
a lumber yard. It was a legitimate lumber yard before Roger bought it.
And it looked like it. They didn't do much to change the look.
They didn't take the sign down because it would have cost money.
Did you guys ever go there?
I wish. No. I had. No.
I
no.
wish.
Because it was torn down at some point.
If Roger eventually sold it, but I think that's after he sells New World. He still had it for a while, and then eventually he sold it, and then I'm not sure what happened to it at that point. But
right.
But when you were there, are you there before they even start shooting?
No, I was there when they started. I don't know how long they'd been shooting, But there was this huge set, and it was the what's his name?
John Saxon ship,
Yeah, John Saxon's
Sadors,
ship. Yeah,
because
there's it.
that's the set that took up the entire stage.
Right.
They even
Yeah.
used the walls as the edge of the ship.
That's right. And they had all these blue gels that people had to crawl under that stage after it was built and put in these blue gels. That was one of the first things I did on the first night. And I was just there while they were shooting, and you were just kind of walking around just doing whatever they wanted anybody to do. So I didn't really have a job classification because it was just a bunch of kids doing whatever, mostly
Everybody were
art.
just grabbing jobs and doing
Yeah,
it.
mostly art department stuff.
Yeah. So you did carpenter stuff. Is it just greasing the wheels, or did you build
Well,
anything
I mean,
else?
I built the shelves in which later became the roto department, and just
Okay.
stuff like that,
Sure.
just maintenance and whenever they needed some shelves or, and there
How
were
are
these two guys that I was working with who are really carpenters. I was just semi handy, not even that good, and they were from Canada, and they were friends with Jim Cameron. I mean, they became friends with Jim Cameron because he was Canadian and he was missing, poutines or something. And so we would go to lunch. I would go to lunch with those two guys and Jim. We would go down to the Ore House, which was a place not too far, and the Rose Cafe, which may even still be there. I don't know. But we, I'd have conversations with Jim Cameron and these two guys, and they mostly talked about Canada,
Sure,
but I remember
sure.
the one thing I remember from Cameron is that he said he was working on a script that was in set in space, but it had to do with military grunts, Marines, just combat guys. And I realized later that became kind of the aliens background. But he had been working on that idea back in 79.
Yeah. And at that point, he'd already only done like what, Exogenesis or something. He had like a short film
Yes.
that sort
And
of
then he
came.
did Piranha 2 or something like that
Piranha
later.
2,
Yep.
that was after Galaxy of Terror. Piranha 2, The Spawning.
Right. Did he direct Galaxy of Terror?
He did second unit, and
Okay.
he did some of the art direction.
Okay. Because I was in the editing room, I think at that same time. I can't remember what was next door to me, but I was working on Sorceress, which was, a sorcery movie with Larry Bach and Barry.
Barry.
They were the editors, Barry Zetlin.
And that was at the lumberyard.
Yeah, that was at the Lumberyard. And they'd shot that in Mexico. I don't know who directed it, but it was hysterical. The footage was hysterical because all these guys has really heavy Spanish accents. And they were just reading the script. Like they would come into a room and somebody would say, "What happened here?" And I was trying to get Barry to tell Roger that they got to keep that track because it's hysterical. I mean,
And that's
it's
no more
just so.
ridiculous than anything else that happens in that movie.
Right,
So,
exactly. It's like, why not make a gag of it for whatever. Anyway, it was a dumb idea. But so Roger would come in and give them notes, and I would sit there, and I was an assistant on that show, so I was just rolling trims and stuff like that. And they always said, Roger's going to come in, so look busy. So you'd have to stand up and check all the trim boxes, like you were doing something, because he didn't want anybody just sitting around
Sure.
where they would let you go. They would say, "Oh, you'll be dropping off on Friday." That was the axe sentence that they would give you. But it was a lot of fun, and working next door was on some editing crew, and it could have been Galaxy of Terror. I thought it was Android, but that was much later,
No,
so.
Android would make sense in terms of Sorceress is like 82, 83, so
Yeah.
Android would make sense right
Okay.
there.
And Steve Herrick was an assistant on the other show.
On
And
Android, he worked on
yes.
Android, so that
Oh, he
makes
did.
sense. Yeah.
Okay. And I got to know him, and he showed me his script. I think it was Critters off of Gremlins. And I think he was trying to get Roger to do that. I'm not sure about that. You
I
should talk to
wonder.
Steve Herrick
Yeah,
because
well, we
he
would love to
worked
do
there.
that. But also Don Opper, who ends
Yeah.
up starring in the movie, and he also did some carpentry
Right.
work, and he was in Android. Android was a movie
Yeah.
he
Yeah,
co-wrote.
I met him, the Opera brothers. There were two of them,
Yeah, Barry and Don.
Barry and Don. Yep. And they were nice guys. Yeah, and we were sort of those were the two movies going on while I was in the editing room at the time. So I guess I'd graduated from, I think I'd probably come back because Barry said, why don't you do this? So I came back at that point.
Now, when you were going back to really quickly, just a couple of things about Battle Beyond the Stars.
Yeah.
How often did it flood in there in the studio?
I don't remember that. I don't remember that, but
Because
it
anytime it
probably.
rained, it flooded, and they had to, I know they had
Ah,
to put cables up
right.
on apple
That's
boxes and
right.
things
They
like
did
that.
that, and now I'm remembering. Yeah. God. That was what we also did after that show wrapped. They tried to make it into kind of an effects house. So they did
Right.
Escape from New York.
Right. Right.
They did rear screen or front screen or both. I think it was front screen projection. As a matter of fact, I'm in one of the shots of Battle Beyond the Stars because there's a shot where I guess the evil ship comes overhead of a bunch of like people standing there, a bunch of farmers or whatever it is. And so I'm one of the guys in the back, meaning my back is to the camera. I was a tall guy. And so I'm wearing peasant wardrobe and as the ship comes over.
So
So
you can start to say star of Battle
star.
Beyond the
Yeah,
Stars, but add
exactly.
that to your credits.
Tallest extra in one.
Tall
Yeah,
guy in Battle Beyond the Stars.
that was me. But I did look and I did get a credit for Roto Animation
Roto Animation and Graphic Effects is
graphic
what.
effects. Okay. And I built the shelves in there too.
Yeah. They didn't include the shelves, but we're gonna write
Right.
IMDb and have them update that.
Thank you. I remember in the main room, the main stage, they had Jim had painted those backgrounds of the planet, where the kind of the pod looking and I didn't know who he was. I said, that looks pretty good. It looks like Frank Frazetta or something. I think he was insulted, but I was pretty impressed with
Yeah, he was very good. He had done a lot
he
of front
was really
projection,
good. He was
a lot of
really
front projection for Battle Beyond the Stars that they ended up not using because it didn't turn out
good.
right. I think it wasn't in
Oh, is
focus,
that right?
and then Roger wouldn't reshoot it, so they just moved on.
Oh God, sounds like Roger.
But then he also but he painted as well for like Escape from New York, which I believe James Cameron is the one who convinced Carpenter to use the studio because they wanted
Yes,
another job.
that sounds right. And
But they
that, I
didn't bring
mean,
you in,
I
and when
was
I'm
there when they were shooting that stuff, but I
okay,
wasn't in it.
because I
I wasn't
think of the
doubling
shelves they
for.
lacked. I mean, they needed
Yeah,
your.
I could have doubled for Kurt, on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
He needs a
But
stand-in. That would have been
yeah,
perfect.
but the last time I saw Cameron was at Thrifty Wash on Main Street in Venice. There was a laundromat there. And
And he was doing his laundry?
he was doing his laundry. And that was a long time ago.
Yeah. Wonder what happened to that guy. It's a shame
Yeah.
he didn't get to do anything else.
I
He had a lot of talent. It's just one of those things.
The city will just eat you up,
Really will.
he
It
wasn't
really
looking
will.
busy, evidently. So
I do a lot of behind the scenes now, and I always wish that I could, do one behind the scenes with Cameron and just tell him that story, and he would go, "I don't remember you."
I
Yeah,
never did my laundry at a
right, ever.
laundromat. How dare you? All right, so you eventually though, you didn't do another thing at New World for a little bit until Sorceress. Did you do anything in between, or was it just
I'm looking at my list. I don't know if I worked on a lot of I worked on a lot of jobs that were like I did AF sound on AFI shows because they didn't have sound people and they would just hire USC guys basically. But they had the equipment, they just didn't have anybody who could run it. And I
But
did a
everybody wanted to
movie.
be directors at AFI, so they didn't have the
Yeah,
group
no,
people.
and DPs. That's all they had. DPs, that was it. So I worked on Bob Mandel, had a short there called Knights of Arrears, which was pretty good. That was a big movie. And I mean, it was almost like a, you shot for a week, but it felt like a a bigger deal. And then I worked on a Graydon Clark movie. I don't know if that was around the same time.
Joysticks.
Joysticks with Jonathan Grice at the time. And Kurt Birch. I don't know. I think Larry cut that. Somebody I know cut that because I was the assistant on that. I did all the sound effects on that and we mixed it Ryder. It was a 2-day mix, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
That's
I,
usually what New World did. Like
yeah,
they didn't give you a long time to
no,
no.
no. And it was horrendous for me. I had mag flipped and stuff like that. I was up for like 5 days finishing that up and doing the mix. It was a nightmare, but
Wow.
it was sort of fun.
Yeah, what was it like working with Graydon Clark? Because he's a guy who only did one movie that New World released, but boy, it seemed like what a
Yeah.
perfect fit he would have been for New World.
Yeah, he was just one of those guys that had he just wanted to make movies. He had all these kids helping him, write stuff, and it was kind of like summer camp over there as well. He was in an office building not too far from where you are on Ventura, and I don't know, over there
Sure.
in North Hollywood somewhere. And it was
Okay.
just an office building, and people were hanging out there. The guys from Stripes, who were in that movie, would be hanging out on the couch in his
Wow.
office. And I don't know. It was just, I only worked there for a couple of months. Those m shows went pretty quick. Anyway, so that was my Graydon Clark experience.
And then
And
you go back to Sorceress. We love to talk. Sorceress is one of our favorites. It's such a wild movie.
I have not ever seen that, so I have no idea.
Now,
Oh.
did you help
Mark, calm
cut
down.
Mark,
Mark,
it's
calm down.
are you're
Well, you
I
can see
mean,
the poster
is
over
that
his
the poster
shoulder.
back? I have the
Yeah.
poster back
Yeah.
here for
That's a great
it.
poster for that
It's a
movie.
great poster.
It's
It
a great
is.
poster. It's really got very little to do with the movie
It has,
itself.
yeah, it's
Yes.
not indicative of the film itself.
I don't remember the flying lion, but
There
there
is
is at the
there
end.
is at the
Is
very
there?
tail end.
All
Yeah.
right.
Okay.
Now, much like the title itself, which also has nothing to do with the movie, but
Right.
that's
Right.
also neither here nor there.
What did you like about it, Mark, so much? Why is it so, why is it on your wall?
It's on my wall for a couple reasons. One, like Ryan indicated, it's Sorceress, but there's really two twin there are twins that are have these special abilities, so it would be
Okay.
sorceresses, I guess, is what
But they're
it
not
should
even, they
be.
don't do
But they're not
magic.
even,
They're
but they don't do
barbarians. It
magic.
doesn't, yeah,
Yeah.
it doesn't, it doesn't.
I think
You
it's
have
sorcerai, Mark.
Sorcerai.
Sorcerai.
I
It's
was
like
going to
syllabi.
say it's got to be Sorcerai.
Right. You have the character Pando, which
Ah,
is
yes.
just a wild swing, sort of a half goat, half human
Okay.
character. These two women can't understand their physical differences and why they're
They think
not
they're
men.
boys?
They
Yeah,
think
they
they're
think, yeah.
boys. Oh, wow.
One of them has sex, and the other one is feeling all
Enjoying the
the
sex, yeah.
enjoying the
Because
sex
twins.
because
I
they're
remember
twins,
that
and
now.
that's how it works with twins.
That's twin science right there.
Right.
Yeah.
It is at every turn you think this couldn't get more wild, and it does. It delivers on
Really?
being wild through the whole movie. Even the end with the flying lion is wild.
Well,
So,
apparently the reason why Jack Hill took his name off, though, because he directed the movie but wanted to work with Corman again because of the special effects that he was doing at the lumberyard. But that ending is just like these two puppets fighting, and like
oh,
it's really not good. And he
no.
apparently took his name off of it because he was like, no, that's really bad. But
I
you
and
apparently
it
didn't, you
it's
never met
that's
him because you
too
didn't
bad.
even know who directed it, right? So
I
did
did
you?
not. I did not see. The directors are usually let go after they. I don't. I mean, he might have gotten a cut, and I might have met him, and I, just don't remember.
Right.
But I just remember being in that room with Larry and Barry. Yeah, and that was it.
Watching this wild footage, I can't. I wish we could
Yeah,
see some of that
I
raw
just
footage. I would kill
right.
for it.
It
To
was
piece
in.
that,
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say to piece that all together would have I would have been questioning, really? This is all supposed to this is the sequence, but I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
I feel like you could have put it together in almost any order and everyone would have been like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, it doesn't.
I only wish they'd kept the broken English as the track.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that Barry and I, whenever we would meet each other, we would say one of those lines like, "You beautiful man, I like." You know, something like that. And I, you know, and they ended up dubbing it and it sounded terrible, you know.
It does lose a little charm. I wish we could have heard that track. That would be amazing. Maybe if we talk to Barry, we'll see if he was able to keep a copy of it. That would be amazing.
He was not.
So you go from that, you go to Angel of Heat, and you do get to work with a lot of people who had worked at New World.
Well, Larry and Barry again, and yeah, I don't remember too many other people. Merle was there. We got to meet Marilyn Chambers and Mary Warnoff. They came in for looping or something, and they were pretty cool, both of them.
Very cool. Did you get to do the looping on that then? You guys were also in on that?
I think we were there as editors. We had cued it probably, and okay. And we just basically sat around and made sure everything went well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was at a place called, it was called at the time JDH Sound, which was on the corner of Bundy and Olympic. Mm-hmm. And now it's a big building, but it was a 76 station surrounded by a building. So anyway, that was a kind of a sound institutional place for quite some time in the 80s.
But you go from there, you do come back to New World, and Roger has sold the company, so it's now the new
yes,
World.
Yes, that's right. And
were you brought back in because of Tony Randall?
I think Barry probably was there already, and okay. I think they had just started. I think Children of the Corn had come out, and Angel, was it Angel?
Yep.
Was the first
yep.
one.
Yep.
And those were both pretty successful, so they thought they were basically on a roll, and I came in to cut trailers. And that's
okay.
And Jim Malconian, who I know you've talked to, he came in his beat up Toyota as an intern or something, and he ended up running the company. You know,
yeah, running post production. He basically inherited yeah. it from Tony Randall.
From Tony,
basically.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and did you know Tony at all? From he worked on Battle Beyond the Stars as well. Behind the scenes,
probably met him. Yes, and somehow, but I'm pretty sure I did. I just don't remember the circumstance. But then we were just, you know, in a suite of offices at Raleigh for years, you know.
Down in that basement.
Yeah, we weren't in the basement. We were, oh, God, at Raleigh. No. You're thinking of when we moved over to Lionsgate.
Correct.
Then
yeah,
we
right,
were
right,
in the basement.
Right.
And yes. That was the second era of that, as far as I was concerned. So that was like 86, 87.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that first iteration was over, and that ended with the last thing I remember working on was Creepshow 2, and both Alan Tumayan, who I know you talked to, and I were working on the montage system, which ran on 26 VHS tapes. They would transfer all the
footage. Wow.
So it was a precursor to the Avid. So mm-hmm. it would, instead of digitally finding the next shot, it would, you know, one of the tapes would find the next shot and then other tape would find the other shot. It was really complicated.
Wow.
And I don't think we ever really cut anything, maybe a TV spot or something. But Alan and I both worked on that machine for a month or so. And that was, I think, the last thing I remember doing there.
What was the first trailer? Do you know what the first trailer was that you cut? Do you remember?
I cut Rare Breed, which was a pretty terrible movie.
We haven't got to that one yet. So.
No, I don't think. I've noticed on all of the Wikipedia films listed, that's the one that doesn't have a hyperlink on it. It's just dead. Mm-hmm. So there is no information on that.
Oh man.
But it was some girl who had a horse and wanted to race and that kind mm-hmm. of a thing. She had been a playmate, and George Kennedy and people like that were in it. It was yeah.
And you somehow then you do a little bit of editing on I Like to Hurt People, which New World is putting out on video. Donald G. Jackson.
Tony worked on that. What was that called? Grunt, the wrestling movie? Was that the
No,
one?
That's another one as
That was
well.
another one.
Yes, there's two
Right?
wrestling movies,
Because
but
that wrestling movie, I didn't work on that wrestling movie you're talking about. And I hope I didn't get credited for that.
it says it on IMDb. It says additional editing. I wondered if it
Okay.
was
Well, maybe
just.
I did. I don't remember that at all. I was drunk a lot in those days. I did. Tony had me do a couple of behind the scenes type marketing things on two movies, Angel 2, which was called not Angel 2, but
Avenging Angel.
Avenging
Eventually
Angel, yeah.
Angel. And there was a show with Charlie Sheen and
The Boys Next Door.
The Boys Next Door. And
Yeah.
I worked on, and
Went
I
to.
what I did is I went down with a camera and a crew, and I interviewed people on the set. Like, I interviewed Penelope Spheeris, who directed that, and
That's
Charlie
very cool.
Sheen was a kid, you know, hadn't done Platoon yet. He was just talking about his dad. He was like 18 or 19 or something like that. Sweet kid. And those things I don't think were ever used for anything. Maybe like they used to do these reels for like Show West and places like that, where you just show a film reel of the upcoming New World movies. And they had this idea of having interviews from the cast and crew. So I shot those and put those together.
Cool. And you then get a job. You did work on the Annihilators, right?
I did because Mike Spence didn't want to do it. And he had worked with Chuck Selye before doing, you know, that
Silent Night,
scary.
Deadly Night.
That's the one. Thank you. And he just didn't want to do another one of those. So I went to Atlanta and I did that.
Get ready to meet the ultimate weapon in the war on crime. The Annihilators. They're out to get you justice. Any way they can. The Annihilators. When it's time to get vengeance.
How is it working for Chuck Sellier? What?
He had me cut like the opening scene where they talk about, I think the opening scene takes place in Vietnam, you know. And he had me cut that scene, and I spent a couple of days on it. I mean, I was already there. I was going to edit the movie, but he just wanted to see the, and so I did that, and he came in, watched it, and he said, okay, this guy can edit. And he didn't come back for a while.
Okay, then he left you alone?
He left me alone. So,
Yes, the woods of Atlanta filling in for the jungles
yeah,
of
exactly.
Vietnam.
Yeah, that's what it was. And it was pretty. And the thing I hated about that movie, even though it was cheap that way, is that they shot everything during the day, you know. So it was like all this vigilante violence and stuff going on, and it was, you know, in broad
Broad
daylight.
daylight,
Broad daylight,
just
right?
out in the streets.
Yep. But it was too expensive to get a big lighting kit, so this is how we're gonna do it, kids.
It was
And
originally, I think, called Vigilante. I think the script was originally called that, and
oh, that
then
makes sense.
they turned it in, called it the Annihilators. And I looked was looking this up. I think Chuck Sellier had like a 3-picture deal with New World at that point in time, because he had
Right.
come off of Silent Night, Deadly Night, and
And they only did the one?
they just did Annihilators. That's
Yeah.
it.
Well,
He didn't make another.
that was pretty bad. I think he I don't know. I don't know the politics of anything
Sure,
back in
sure.
those days, but it just seemed like it could have been better. They could have put more money into it or something like that. I don't know what the deal was. But yeah, it was disappointing. But my 30th birthday I spent cutting effects. I mean, I came back to LA and we shot all the Foley at that same place, JDH. And went up to Toronto to mix that show on my 30th birthday. I was up till 2 in the morning finishing that mix. That was
And
fun.
now, when you're working on a movie like Annihilators, and I think we're kind of saying it a little bit, but we'll just go ahead and say it. It's not a great film.
No, I wouldn't watch it again. But Dee Wallace Stone was there. E.T.'s mom, right? She was married to Christopher Stone. And she came into the editing room. She was so nice. Everybody was so nice. All the cast guys would come in and look at cuts and stuff, and they were all just really cool. That's right. I went up to Andy Wood, I think, was the character or the actor who played one of the characters. And we had to loop a bunch of stuff with him. and he was doing a play in New York. So I went to New York. They flew me to New York to loop him, and somebody else was in the looping booth that I had to kick out. And I told one of the, guys, "This is our time. We got to go. This guy's gotta leave." And so who comes walking out of the booth but Woody Allen? And he had been in there, and he was pissed that he had to get kicked out. And he
Oh
just
my
comes
gosh.
out stomping, like, "Well, I gotta get another room." And
Of
I was like, I was a huge fan.
course.
I couldn't say anything.
Sorry, we have to loop the Annihilators. You
Yeah,
got
the
to understand.
Annihilators takes precedent over, Hannah and her sisters or whatever the heck it was.
Sorry, you're gonna have to put that aside. We gotta finish the Annihilators. You don't understand. The people need their cinema.
Sorry, Woody.
Now, does the Annihilators get you pretty smart?
These are the daughters every father waits his life for. These are the innocents every mother holds her dreams for. And these are the gentle flowers ready to bloom and touch the world.
Schoolgirls from hell. Pretty smart.
I suppose from, I mean, pretty smart, not even a step up, I would say. But I went back to New World, worked trailers for a while, and then I guess I got that. Tony said, "Yeah, take this guy." He cut the Annihilators or whatever. So I did work on Pretty Smart, which was also just Dimitri Logothetis, nicest guy in the world.
Yes, we've spoken to him.
Yeah,
We
we
interviewed him.
interviewed. Yeah, we spoke with him.
And there was just some shots he didn't get and stuff like that. But overall, it was fun. It was fun, and to see Patricia Arquette for the first time was fun because I thought she was pretty much the best actress in there, and she hadn't really, I don't think, done anything at that point. But you could tell she was good.
Now, so from you saying that he missed some shots, that tells me you probably weren't in Greece while they were shooting. You were.
No, I was not, and I wired them or telex them or whatever you do, because their opening shot where all the girls are coming into the
School.
boarding school, they're running out of light, and they missed some punch-ins for some of those stories. And I said, "Oh man, you can't." It's like calling cut to Keenan Wynn. I said, "I think you got to go back there and do some pickups because that scene's going to be short." And he couldn't, he didn't or whatever. And so that always sort of bugged me about it. That was sort of a flawed movie in my perspective because it just didn't start out great. Because that's a crucial scene.
There's a lot of like introducing all the different girls as they're coming into the school,
Right.
introducing the teacher, and the teacher's doing his dirty business
Creepy stuff.
with filming girls and stuff, and then playing the videotapes to his many rich guests, I guess, into his office.
I mean, it's a good idea for those kind of that mid-80s, Girls Gone Wild kind of movies, Hard Bodies and all that stuff that was coming
Yeah, it
out.
was because of Hard Bodies, I think, that's why, because Dimitri had kind of helped with locations, I think, or something like that for
Okay.
Hard Bodies. And they
That
shot
makes
Hard
sense.
Bodies 2 around that same time as well,
Okay, that
that they
makes
were shooting
sense.
Pretty Smart. And he had, a lot of family and stuff from Greece, and so he was like seen as like the go-to guy for that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But
That was what it was.
you must have worked well with him because you work with him
Yes,
on Slaughterhouse Rock.
I then Slaughterhouse Rock came along, and a sequence of that was shot at the stage at the Lumberyard, which they built a sewer system and they flooded it purposefully, so that the monster could walk through it. And that was a lot of fun to work on that show as well. We cut that at the what was at the time Lorimar, the MGM lot, so now Sony. We
So
had it
you had a
there.
good relationship with Dimitri then, right? I mean,
Yes, he was a super nice guy.
But you didn't continue on with him after that?
No, that was, I don't know what happened after that. I think I just stuck to trailers for a while. I'm pretty sure I went back to when New World was over, now at Lionsgate. And the next thing which came pretty soon was Under the Boardwalk,
yes,
which I did over at Lionsgate. And I tried to get on Heather's as the editor. I had an interview with their name, Denise DeNovi.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'd read, and they, you know, New World gave me the script and said, you know, I think they wanted one of their guys on that show. And so I went in to interview and didn't get it because Michael was pretty set on the editor that he wanted on that thing. And that turned out to be great. But the actress, sorry.
Winona Ryder.
Winona.
Mm-hmm. She was downstairs hanging out for a day or two. And I ended up working on Meet the Applegates. We did a 20-minute Show West reel on film for Meet the Applegates. Interviews and montages and I got to use Danny Elfman's music because it was just going to be shown at Show West. So that was fun.
That's really
cool.
You have
a copy of that?
No, I don't. I don't know if anybody has a copy of that because it was just projected at Show West in whatever year that was, you know.
And then, New World doesn't even end up putting out Meet the Applegates because the whole company gets sold.
But yeah, whatever happened to that? That did get released, though.
I think
I went to see it.
Like a few movies that they had going at the time end up being released by other companies. But they do put out Under the Boardwalk. And you did work on that. And
I did. I was the editor on that. When the
sun is down, it's the last weekend of their last summer.
Gentlemen, take a bath.
They can part friends.
It's not going to be the same without you around here, bro.
They can part enemies.
You guys think you could just cross the line like that?
Or they can stay together forever.
Which way are you going?
Which way are you going?
Under the Boardwalk, rated R.
A lot of surfing footage, I'm sure you had to go through and just pick out all the best stuff.
And there was a guy who shot that off of a jet ski. God, I wish I could remember his name. But he was amazing, you know. And he had a bunch of guys in the water and then, you know, somebody with a jet ski and he was on the back of the jet ski and they would follow these surfers. And they had a bunch of doubles that could do the surfers the actors that couldn't surf, which was all of them. and, you know, they did a good job. They did a really good job.
Well, not Keith Coogan. He could surf, right? I mean...
I don't think he... Maybe he could surf.
Well, I remember that beginning scene where he's wearing the fake beard, and I don't know how they kept that on him in the water, but...
I love the poster where they literally cut out a picture and slap it on.
Yeah, right. What happened to his head? Why is he so superimposed in that poster?
Maybe he was sunburnt that day. I have no idea, but every time I see that poster, I go, poor Keith. Wow, what happened there?
I know. It's just like his head's just not quite proportionate to the rest of the cast. It's just very, it's very glaring. I mean, I know it's like before they had Photoshop, but my God.
Yeah.
Really rough.
And it was funny because that film was originally started being directed by somebody else whose name I cannot remember, but he worked for less than a week and New World just didn't like the footage.
Oh.
And so they hired Fritz, who had done some other stuff with them. Fritz Kirschen, he became a good friend of mine. I mean, I talked to him probably, I don't know, 6 years ago or something like that.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's teaching film in Oklahoma City at...
Wow. Yeah, we're gearing up to talk with him in a couple of weeks.
Well, give him my best. He's a great guy.
I will.
And he cut a lot of stuff with Barry after he worked. I worked with him.
Okay. And now he'd worked on Children of the Corn. You directed that.
That's right.
And he directed Tough Turf.
Oh, I worked on that too.
You did?
I did a promotional video for the song Tough Turf.
Come on.
And so they literally wanted an MTV video for that movie. I can't remember the name of the band. Help me out. Southside Johnny or one of those bands.
Yeah.
And so I basically cut a trailer of the footage, but we never shot any of the band. We didn't shoot the band footage performing. And New World. MTV only wanted to promote the band, or if you did a trailer, they just didn't want to air it. So we went out and shot a bunch of kids running around singing Tough Turf and swinging on the swing sets and all this stuff to try and get it on MTV and cut that in. And that didn't work. They still said no.
Right.
The New World had tried to do stuff like that. They'd also tried to do that with Soul Man too, right? Like they had recorded a big video.
Yes. I didn't work on that, but yes, I seem to remember that. They had a lot of missteps after their first two big movies. They sort of never really got back to any giant box office success.
It's true.
As far as I remember.
Yeah.
They stumbled into Hellraiser.
Hellraiser, for sure.
But
that was big.
Yeah.
I remember working on Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, or whatever that was, and that to me was hysterical.
Yeah,
that was a good movie. I remember just cutting tons of spots on that.
Remember our old hometown? Nothing to do but watch the paint dry.
I see you've made your famous tic tac pie.
Then one day along came.
You looking for me?
What a bombshell! What a star!
Here's dinner.
What a cut!
Elvira,
Fist of the Dark.
Rated PG-13, special sneak preview Saturday, September 24th. Check.
I don't know how big a financial success it was, but it's certainly like one of their better movies for sure.
Yeah, I think the exploitation era was waning in the late 80s, mid to late 80s. I just get the feeling the box office wasn't as big. I worked at Canon also back and forth, so I did a lot of trailers for Canon, like Mission in Action kind of movies, but not that one.
And like American Ninja or some of the other.
There was a David Carradine movie that was like a POW thing.
Yes, POW The Escape.
The Escape. Okay, that's. I remember cutting a trailer for that.
Vietnam, 1972. Colonel James Cooper has vowed to free the prisoners left behind.
Everybody goes home.
Captain Vinh is determined to keep them.
They stay here.
So you kind of bounced around. You weren't just working for New World specifically.
No, I would be in and out.
You're a freelancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never really settled down to. And I was, I was trying to be a real editor. It's funny because I was working on probably Sorceress, people were calling me from this movie called Valley Girl. You know, we need another assistant on Valley Girl, and we want to hire you. And I was like, I've got this job. I can't just leave in the middle of it. And I wish I had, because Valley Girl and Ava Gardner went on to, cut Platoon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and I told the director, who was up here in Bellingham for the Cascadia Women's Film thing a couple years ago. And I told her that story, and she was like, yeah, I remember we didn't have an assistant. So that was cool.
So you would have been just the assistant on that movie, or would you have edited the entire thing?
No, just the assistant. And that's what I was at the time. I was working for Larry and Barry as an assistant. But I was trying to break into a movie group of editors that would be going on to do something better than, Corman stuff.
Than Sorceress. And
never really happened.
You did get to edit
Sorceress. Platoon. Which one?
I mean, it's like, they're both movies. You can't deny
that's
that.
That's correct. Very good.
Now I do have to ask, and this doesn't have to do with New World per se, but according to IMDb, it says that you did work on A Return to Salem's Lot.
Yes.
And we love Larry Cohen, but
Larry Cohen, yep.
I don't know if you have any stories about your involvement in
not really
working on that.
My friend Dave Kern, who I mentioned earlier, I believe was the editor of that one. I'm not sure. But I would go back and forth to that place, JDH Sound, which I'm talking about, and work there. for, and then he, you know, he needed somebody. I did sound effects maybe on that one or something. But yes, Return to Salem's a lot. I don't remember. The only thing I remember is one line where Michael Moriarty comes in and says, and he says, any sodas, any Cokes? That's it. That's all I remember. Because I thought
you need to remember.
I thought that was a funny line.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
It is.
Did you meet Larry Cohen at the time?
I'm sure I did. Yes. I mean, I was at the mix. I'm sure he was there.
Yeah.
And Dave worked with him a lot. Dave Kern worked with him a lot. So he was like, and Dave also worked with Keith Carradine a lot. Mm. So yeah. So Dave Kern was one of those guys, like Larry and Barry, who were friends of mine, who always hired me on stuff.
So you were trying to get in to do Heathers. You do get to do Under the Boardwalk. You have edited several movies at this point, some for New World, some for not. Also bouncing around doing editing for trailers. But did you think doing Under the Boardwalk, did you think like, okay, I got, this is, a, I mean, cause it's not a bad movie, to be honest.
Yeah, no. I never thought, I don't remember ever thinking that I was making a movie that was gonna, maybe I was deluding myself. I can't remember, but I just assumed I would get another one and hopefully it would be better. And that one was probably the best one that I ever worked on at New World. For sure.
Annihilator is pretty smart, and Under the Boardwalk probably. So
that was a pretty decent movie,
and it did go to Cannes. It played at Cannes.
Did it really?
And then they released it in 89, or in the same time, pretty much like a week afterwards, after they released Heathers.
Okay.
In April of 1989. I mean, did you know at that point in time, like, were things looking grim for New World? Did you have any signs that
this by 89, yeah. I mean, I feel like I stopped working there in 87. Yeah, so you could kind of tell it was going a different way, a war broken up. I didn't go over to the main building on Sepulveda with all the, you know, money people and producers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was just basically in the basement at that point, you know, just doing editing stuff. So yeah, I know Jim knew what was going around at the time, and I still get together with Dave Parker, Kevin Soulson, and Jim Malcone, and the four of us until Kevin moved to Hawaii and I moved to Bellingham, so we don't get together as much, but we had a steak dinner thing like three or four times a year where we would get together. So those three guys I kept in touch with,
right,
for sure, because we all worked at Cimarron and places like that, other trailer places. I sort of decided to dedicate myself to trailer editing because you know, I was getting up there, and I, you know, got married, eventually started having kids, and I just wanted a more of a, you know,
a steady job. That seems to be like at the same, Alan when Tamayan was saying kind of the same thing, and I think that's even right. Kevin Soulson, like, you get maybe you get a chance to cut a couple features, but eventually, like, that work is so difficult to get that eventually you kind of settle into just wanting to do.
You really do have to kind of click into a good group of people when you're young.
Yeah,
it's hard to sort of click into those people after you've done all these New World movies. It's sort of like over. But trailers were very lucrative in the 90s. Studios were throwing money at it. They had no idea why, and it was just a great time to work in the trailer business because the salaries were unbelievable. Not so much anymore, but at the time, wow.
Yeah.
And then we look back on it and go, oh, holy crap, they did not know what they were doing. And then the business people got in the late 90s, and it was much more heavily patrolled for excessive spending.
They reined it back in. What other movie before we get towards wrapping up? But you edited Space Invaders.
I did.
And
I did.
Patrick Reed Johnson, we interviewed him.
He's a very lovely guy.
He is. He's a great guy. We had a great time talking with him. And he worked a little bit at New World as well. Did you meet him through that, or how did you get
that? No, I don't remember how I got that job. I guess I interviewed for it.
Okay.
And tricky thing about that story is where I cut the whole show and we screened it, and I'm going to forget this guy's name, which is probably better, but he knew the people that were producing, that were part of the producing thing. Patrick did not. He was not part of that group. They just were producing it. But this guy, whose name I can't remember, came back from some European thing that he was doing. And the day after we screened it for him, they fired me and he became the editor.
Oh.
Yeah. But the show was already cut. And they said, oh, it's a budgetary thing. You know, it's not a budgetary thing. You know, I was working for nothing. But anyway.
Did he make many changes on it? I mean, you had already cut it.
Not that I could tell. Because when I saw the finished version, it seemed pretty much the same. So, you know, I didn't think they did much. And I don't know if his name's on it. I don't even remember. Huh. It must be on it. It must be like two editors.
Okay.
Or something like that. But so that was a great experience until it wasn't.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but still, I thought it was amazing what they did on that budget. Yeah. And then the last thing I worked on as an editor was a movie called The Second Wife, directed by Michael Steinberg, with Julia Stiles' first movie that was called Wicked when it was released.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you, and that at that point you were just doing trailers and
right. And I had been working at this trailer place called Poetic Justice. Along with Greg Steinberg, we had cut Fire Walk With Me, one of the trailers we did, which it was kind of a cool trailer place. We worked on a lot of decent movies. And so Greg's brother, Michael, was directing this movie. It was called The Second Wife while we were shooting it. And it later was released as Wicked. And that was also a pretty decent movie.
And were you happy to, was it interesting to like step back into, you hadn't, you know, edited a movie in some time.
Been about 6 or 7 years. Yeah. No, it was fun. And it was, I guess we cut on Avid. I think it was Avid by then. Yeah. Mm. By 97. Mm. Yeah. Everybody was on Avid. I think 92, we all learned Avid. It came into Cimarron. Everybody got an Avid.
I was in college and we were learning on the old Adobe, the original Adobe.
Oh yeah.
That's where we cut everything on those giant zip drives.
Right.
They were like $75 a drive, and it probably had like 6 gigabytes on it. And you were like, man, the memory on this. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I remember the cartridge that they had was like a bread box. We called it a bread box. We'd shove it into the port, and it was like, 250 megabytes or something. Yeah. Right. But it's insane. When you've been in this business for like 85 years or whatever it was for me, and you start on Moviola's getting those dupes from Conrad that Tony Randall was talking about last year. I listened to that one today. And you could barely see the image, and you're cutting on these loud Moviola's, and then you go to videotape, which was really hard to do. And then by now, you know, I've got 2 20-terabyte drives, and I can watch 8K, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just insane, the difference.
Yeah. So, the way you can do now has got to be wild. And you're still at it, correct? I mean, you're still working.
Yes. I have a trailer company. We just cut the trailer for The Penguin Lessons, which is coming out.
Yes.
Or came out last
week.
Steve Coogan. So I work a lot for Sony Classics. Classics. I've known Tom Bernard since the 80s. So he called in 2001 and said, you want to cut trailers? And I said, sure. And I was working at a place and I started just doing it at night. And then eventually I got enough stuff from Sony Classics where I could do it as my own little company. And then Sony, regular Sony, we do a lot of, and that's one thing I remember today. So Sony, we do a lot of behind the scenes and stuff like that. So the movie Here, which we did a big piece for, not the trailer, but, you know, some sort of behind the scenes work. And I noticed that Don Burgess was the cinematographer. And Don Burgess, I said, God, that guy looks familiar. Well, he shot Under the Boardwalk.
Yeah.
And he's been shooting all Robert Zemeckis' movies.
Right. And he shot Under the Boardwalk.
Yeah.
That's so unbelievable.
That's amazing. So
everybody's still around.
Where did you edit Under the Boardwalk? Did you do that at New World or did you do
Yeah,
that
they had
else?
A there was a facility that we called Big Time, which was across the parking lot from the building at Lionsgate, which had the mixed stages and everything, and a lot of people worked there. Offices upstairs and all kinds of editing rooms everywhere. Like Sean Penn always cut his movies there and stuff like that. Mm. But across the street were all these, I think it had been some sort of educational book storage place at one point. They converted all the rooms to editing rooms. So there were a lot of editing rooms in there. And so a lot of New World movies, like Dead Heat was next door to us when we were cutting Under the Boardwalk, which was called Wipeout when we were cutting it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah, that's what it was written at. And Robert King, who wrote that, went on to do like The Good Wife. And I mean, if you look up Robert King's credits, he's huge in TV.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
A lot of roads go back to New World. It's kind of wild.
I went to a screening of what I was working for MGM trailers, and I was going to cut a Red Corner with Richard Gere. And I walked into the screening room, and there was Robert King. He had written that.
Amazing. Wow.
Were you given a lot of freedom when you're cutting Under the Boardwalk? Were you allowed to just kind of do it?
You kind of follow the script. I mean, that's what you do. And just try to be on the right person at the right time. And depends on what they got. And then when the director comes in and says, you know, let's switch performances. I mean, and there's actors who do the same thing every time, and there's actors who do a totally different thing every time. Like on Wicked, there was an actor playing one of the characters, and every time he did the same scene, it was wildly different, and it was really hard to piece together a performance. You kind of had to go with one take back and forth, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's basically those kind of movies. You don't have it's, you know, a lot of leeway, but at a certain point, you know, there are certain sections where you can, you know, try a few things, but mostly it's just you just go and buy the script.
Okay. So I know you did a lot of trailers for New World. Is there one that you just comes to mind that you did that you were
from,
really
from
proud
New
of?
World?
Yeah,
I feel like Crimes of Passion. I worked on. I know the Philadelphia Experiment I did not cut, but I worked on it a lot. High Point.
High Point is Barry Zetlin, isn't it?
Yes. We recut that movie and rescored it. That was a decent movie. That was kind of fun. And then I remember, I think I might have cut Vamp and I feel like Jake Speed I was there for, but I don't remember. Anyway, but I cannot remember. I wish I could.
No, it's
do you right. remember working with any of the like Straw Weisman or any
Straw for sure. Those guys smoked incredible pot that I could not handle. Straw and Nelson Lyons would come by my shop. I was working out of my garage when I started the Grossmith Company, and we tried to hire Nelson for Art School Confidential because it had that kind of feel to it. And he came up with this such great bizarre stuff that we couldn't use it, but it was fun hanging out with him. He was a very mad guy. But yeah, Straw and Lee Stein, Marshall Drazen, those guys were all the producer writers of all those trailers. And it was kind of a great experience to be at. It was a lot of fun, especially looking back on it. And we were on the lot for a lot of that. We were on the Raleigh lot, which was a cool place to be.
Even if they weren't shooting much for New World movies then at the
time. Not really.
But it's just being on the lot. You were on
being
a
on a
lot,
lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Lumberyard was the coolest thing though, because it was just just very bare bones, you know. And it was just kind of amazing what they were able to do. I just think of that model shop and all the creature effects and stuff that they did at that building, and just kind of marvel at how the heck did they do this? You know, it was,
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
When you interviewed Corman in 2015, did you talk to him about, you were at his office in San Vicente. Did you mention that you worked on Battle Beyond the Stars?
I brought the poster. I had bought the poster and it came in the mail. It was folded. It wasn't rolled, so it wasn't the best. But he did a whole interview. He was working on a movie that Sony was going to release called Operation Rogue. I think Treat Williams is in it. This is when he was doing all these Philippines war movies. So we went up there. I set up, talked to him. And I think before we started, I told him, or maybe at the end, I told him I worked at the lumberyard, you know, because... And he got up and he went over to Julie, you know, in the other office, and he said, "This guy works at the lumberyard." You know, so they were very, very happy, you know, about that whole era, I think, because it was pretty cool. But he was great, and he told his whole story, which he's told a thousand times. If you see any one of the movies that documentaries where he's talked about his life, talking about Stanford, getting out and, you know, going into the Poe movies and meeting Jack Nicholson and all that stuff. And then he wanted to produce Easy Rider, or they wanted him to do Easy Rider.
Yes, they approached him. Yeah.
He passed on. He said that was a big, big regret.
But he didn't. He apparently, it was AIP who wanted to keep him as a secondary director, as a potential to come in, because they didn't trust Dennis Hopper.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so they wanted to like keep Dennis Hopper on, like, you could be fired at any moment, and then we will just have Roger come in and direct the rest. And Roger didn't think that was very kind, and Dennis Hopper, of course, didn't take well to that at all, and they walked.
Right.
And then they went to Bob Rafelson's company, and that's where they made the movie, but...
Okay. Yeah. And
I know he regretted it.
Too. Yeah, no, I, you know, sometimes you just can't work things out at the time, and that's what happens. Who knows? Could have been a terrible movie. Just turned out that was everybody was ready for something like that.
Yeah. Were you interviewing him for a project, or just you?
Just that release. They wanted to put a little something on the DVD of
Operation Rogue,
I think is what it was called. There was a series of movies that Treat Williams was in, playing some general or something like that. And they were, maybe they're going to package them all at the same time. So, and I was looking for that reel to try and find it, but I don't have it anymore. And I think probably Sony might have it somewhere. And I work with Sony all the time, and I was trying to see if they could pull it up, but they have a much better system of cataloging all their stuff that we worked on now, but not back then.
Mm.
But it was fun to talk to him.
Yeah, if you could get that, boy, that would probably be so cool to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically I couldn't use any photos that weren't approved by, you know, Roger or something like that. So you couldn't really do a real job. But it was probably a 10, 12 minute piece is all.
Okay.
That's great.
Just getting to interview him and getting to kind of go full circle, really, right? With, you know, in a way, even though you're still working.
But, yes.
You know, no, to kind of go back to the beginning, it had been kind of a cool experience.
When I heard I could do that, I was thrilled to go over there. Because I normally don't do the interviews for the company, although I have done a bunch. We worked on Justified for a long time, and I went out to the lot and talked to a lot of people on that. But I don't care for it. You know, I'd rather... just sit in the dark room. That's my deal.
I understand that. I'm the same.
Was there a story he shared that like you hadn't heard?
Roger?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I hadn't heard a lot of the stuff when I interviewed him. But since then, I realized whenever he's interviewed, he tells the same stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's all pretty good. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was all kind of new to me because I hadn't really heard it. But there's that great Corman's World, or that's the best one.
But there's
plenty of interviews that he did when he got the honorary Oscar and all that stuff. There's tons of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's truly a great you know, filmmaker, whatever. And he's got a great eye. All the movies that he picked up from, that they distributed from Europe, just essential stuff.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. All the foreign films that he picked up, and, you know, yeah. Truffaut and...
Jacques Tati. I saw Mon Oncle d'Amérique on there. I mean, pretty incredible.
Yeah. Kurosawa, like everybody, he really he got a lot of, and you know that they did that because Barbara Boyle, the lawyer at the time, she went on to Orion and other places, but she just was trying to keep the schedule going because they were on just a drive-in schedule,
right?
And so they had this chunk of time in the year where they weren't making any money, and they weren't any money to the distributors that wasn't coming back because they didn't have any product.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So you said, what if we put out these foreign movies and that'll just keep the train rolling?
Unbelievable that they would do that, because that has nothing to do with the drive-in circuit.
No, no.
But thank God. I remember seeing one Corman movie when I was a kid in high school. We drove to a drive-in, you know, like a Canoga Park or something. And it was like The Hot Box or some sort of thing where girls were trapped.
Yeah, Hotbox. That's true.
Is that it?
Yeah. And they're nurses, and they get captured.
That's right. And I did not know that who Corman was when I saw that movie. And I didn't even know about. I didn't connect that movie until much, much later.
Jonathan Demme co-wrote it and produced it.
Wow. There you go.
Joe Viola directed. That's the Hotbox.
Yeah. And we worked on a Jonathan Demme movie, Somebody Getting Married. What was that? And Corman was in that movie. Corman had a guest spot with, what's her name? And, oh God, you can tell how old I am. I can't remember a thing.
You're doing great. Don't worry about it.
And if you guys didn't have that New World Pictures t-shirt on, I wouldn't know what podcast I was on.
you would have forgotten by now. What are we talking about? What am I doing here? And that's it. That is our interview with Daniel Gross. Thank you so much, Daniel, for being on the show.
Thank you.
And we hope you enjoyed this interview. We had a great time talking with Daniel. We're gonna have many more interviews happening this year, so please stick around. If you want to listen to him, you got to go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. It's just that simple. It's the name of this podcast.com. That's it.
Without spaces. And you don't need to put in capitals. I mean, some people, you can, but you don't have to
put in HTTP.
I think if you just type it into Chrome, it fills that in for you. I think you're good.
No, I think everybody should learn how to properly put in a
very literal
website.
Have to properly enter the domain.
This is the time. That's where you can find all of our episodes, our interviews, our articles, our t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. That does help us and supports the show. If you also want to support the show in a non-monetary fashion, you can tell people about it. Spread the word. Follow us on the social medias like the Instagrams and the Blue Skies and the others and the whatnots. And we will see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.